we're all having access to so much more information, and we're able to get in touch with our guidance, and we're able to see things and feel things and sense things in a way that we never have before. And I also feel like we're allowing it more. It's the ease and the grace of allowing it more. So yes, we do have capability, and it is so much easier than it's ever been. And the only thing that ever gets in people's way is mindset. That's the only thing. Believe that you can and you will.
Hello, I'm Julie Kroll. You're listening to the Dr. Julie Show, All Things Connected. Each week we gather right here to make connections that break through the illusion of separation. Welcome. Your journey of conscious evolution continues right here, right now. I have a friend who is a medical intuitive. She's brilliant and always spot on. For her, she often pauses and says, "Let me tune into my guides." For me, I don't work that way, although I've been clairaudient, clairvoyant, and claircognizant since I was a little girl. I never consciously tuned into specific guides. I always experienced my guidance from the whole of creation and how I experienced myself in relationship to an undivided consciousness and God creator source. It has always been kind of a gentle flow, not a stop-start conversation. We've had very long conversations about our differences and how we receive guidance. I've learned a lot from her. 5 years ago, a different friend introduced me to one of her friends by saying, "She's one of us." This person turned to me and immediately asked who I communicate with, expecting me to acknowledge a certain lineage of guides that she works with. When I explained how I receive guidance, she looked disappointed and not really interested in continuing a conversation with me. That response was perplexing. Until I read the book Guides by Marilyn Aloria. Marilyn says there's no right or wrong way in how we develop our relationship with guidance, and writes about all the different roles and types of guides, from planets and cosmos to ascended beings, angels, our higher self, other loved ones, animals and nature, even color, numbers, and sound. How guides connect with us is as unique as you are. These mystical connections to soul guides and divine teachers are fascinating. Today, we're going to explore how guides connect with us and how we can deepen this relationship. I invite you to take a few conscious breaths, bring your awareness to your heart, relax, open your mind, and settle into your essential wholeness as I introduce my co-host. Dr. Paul Mills is professor of public health and family medicine at the University of California, San Diego. He has over 400 scientific publications in the fields of pharmacology, oncology, cardiology, psychoneuroimmunology, behavioral medicine, and integrative health. He's the author of the award-winning book, Science, Being, and Becoming, The Spiritual Lives of Scientists. And Paul, I'm like really happy to bring you in today, not only as this award-winning author, but you have brought in some of the most amazing scientists that you interviewed for your book. And I'm really excited about who you're bringing in today. So I'm going to turn it over to you and you can introduce her.
Yeah, happy to, Julie. Thank you. It's great to be together again. And my pleasure to introduce Dr. Tawny Tidwell, one of our two guests. She's a Tibetan medicine physician, having completed her medical studies at the Mensikon in northern India and the Tibetan Medical College at Sungwong University in eastern Tibet. Tawny also holds a PhD in biocultural anthropology from Emory University. She completed postdoctoral training fellowships at the Austrian Academy of Sciences, the University of Vienna, and the University of Wisconsin at Madison. In addition to maintaining a private clinical practice in Tibetan medicine, she has an active research program that facilitates bridging across the Western scientific and the Tibetan medical traditions. And her work includes investigating mind-body relationships foundational to cultivating flourishing and healthy minds and healthy bodies. I want to add that a few years ago, I had the pleasure of traveling with Tani and some other friends and colleagues to Lhasa, Tibet. We all went there for a medical conference, which was celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Mensikon Hospital and Medical School there, which had been founded by the 13th Dalai Lama. And it was just a beautiful conference. And Tani, it was a delight to spend time there with you. And I want to welcome you to Main Street Mystics. I'm really looking forward to our conversation together.
Thank you so much, Paul. Thank you so much, Julie. Pleasure to be with you, here with you both.
Thank you. It is a pleasure to be with you, and it's a pleasure to introduce our next guest as well. Marilyn Aloria is the author of the best-selling book, Guides, Mystical Connections to Soul Guides and Divine Teachers, a book in the Common Sentience series, which this Main Street Mystics has been featuring. She is a gifted psychic medium, teacher, and coach with an unmatched capacity to ignite deep soul-level transformation for her clients around the world. Marilyn provides messages from guides that are always with us and from loved ones who have crossed over. After a successful Emmy Award-winning career in the entertainment industry, Marilyn shifted her focus to sharing her natural gifts and helping others discover their own intuitive abilities. Marilyn simplifies the path to living a life of peace, ease, and alignment, making true fulfillment easy and achievable. And Marilyn, as I welcome you in, I do have to say that your book really truly does what your bio states. You are such a good teacher in the book. You continually to teach the readers how they themselves can develop this and different tools. You've done an amazing job. So welcome to our show.
Thank you. I loved your beginning story, and it's such a great testament to the barriers that I'm breaking through and people like you are breaking through as well, so that we can open up our belief system and really connect in a very magical way that speaks to our souls. So thank you.
Well, I'm looking forward to having you expand on that. And I think that will be our first question right after my traditional first question, because I think that is important. And the intro spoke to that, which it was fascinating. Once I started reading your book, I'm getting this at a different level, even though we've had so many interviews during the Main Street Mystics series. So this is going to be fun. But I do have a traditional first question, if you don't mind starting. And I'm curious where both of you might be with this. So I'm going to leave this to both of you. The Main Street Mystics is a part of the Dr. Julie Show, All Things Connected. And we've been asking for nearly 10 years, what does all things connected mean to you? And we've really been on a journey over the last decade of trying to prove it. And then just like you, Marilyn, going, the breakthroughs were right here. It's like really easy. So I'm going to start with you, Marilyn. What does all things connected mean to you?
The word that comes to me is consciousness. As I delve into this work more and more, and even trying to understand what happens to us after we leave or why we're here or how we even came here, I don't follow traditional rules. Like as a psychic medium talking to deceased people, I've always played with the fact that maybe we're talking to really somebody, even if the material is very exact that you get, the information you get. Who knows if it's just a consciousness, a higher consciousness. So I think all things to me is just it's an evolving consciousness of infinite wisdom. And I don't know that I could answer that fully because it's constantly evolving. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're hearing my dog bark in the background, but there you go.
there's more consciousness right there.
He has something to say about it.
We'll do that. Tani, I'm curious from your perspective, and the bio Paul read was just really beautiful, and I'm so intrigued. And even the pieces that are in Paul's book, Science, Being, and Becoming, were so intriguing to read about you and your experience there. So what does all things connected mean to you?
Coming from a tradition in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, the Tibetan medical tradition, where reincarnation is such a major part of their paradigm, where we have been in various constellations with one another for time immemorial, and that we have been one another's mothers, we've been in all sorts of different kinds of relationships, that all things connected literally means that our consciousnesses have been in conversation and in dynamic relationship in all sorts of conditions, hardships, sufferings, achievements for many, many, many lifetimes, and will be so in many lifetimes to come. And I think not only in our conscious state, but that all things that we do, all actions we take can literally have ramifications across the world. And I think we saw this in the pandemic, that experiences on one side of the globe intimately connect across the other side of the globe, and that we literally, the food that we rely on, the water that we drink, the air that we breathe is intimately connected to every action that we take as a global community, as a global partnership. And so I think All Things Connected has that palpable, that tangible experience that we are completely interdependent on one another, on one another's happiness, on one another's experiences, and we'll continue to do that as we move forward.
Mm. I love that perspective you took. Thank you, Tani. This is so rich and meaningful for me, and I'm sure many of our listeners, because it adds this whole new, I love this cultural piece that we're going to tie in with you being here, because that's your expertise. But this, both of your answers kind of spoke to this idea of how you introduce guides, Marilyn, that the universe, there's something greater here that exists in the universe, and it's here to support us. And then you say that every experience in the universe becomes a magical dance. Let's start. Can you say more about how you see guides and our relationship to this something greater that exists?
It's such a big question. I feel like for me, through my own journey and discovery, I needed something greater than myself to guide me on this path, because I found myself struggling so much with trying to live in this existence. And there was always something magical that would show up at the most, you know, at a time at my lowest that didn't make sense, but brought such an amazing sense of peace. And things would happen, or, you know, I'd hear voices and certain things would happen that just wouldn't be explained in the physical world or by the normal thinking person. And as I dove deeper into it and discovered there's something so much greater than us that is constantly here supporting us, and it shows up for each one of us in its own way, because we are our own instruments and we have to learn how to work our instruments to communicate with this divine energy, it has blown the roof off my life and continues to every single day to work with that type of guidance. Like you said, a beautiful way, it's an ongoing conversation that happens all the time. And being able to be directed and feel supported in that way every single day is really quite amazing and available to every single one of us. So I'm not sure if I answered your question fully, because your question is so deep and can be a podcast that could go for years and ever evolving. And then all four of our perspective on it is amazing. But that's my answer to what it is for me. It's just something that's there that's always guiding us.
I love that. And it takes it out of the realms of, I'm going to check in with my guides as a personified person or entity or energy that's there that a lot of people will refer to and speak to when they're talking about guides. And you open that to us about that ongoing dance with the universe. I love that. And Paul, I want to just jump in here and ask Tani. Tani, when you think about guides and your experience of guidance over the years, I loved your responses. And as I was reading Paul's book, I could see where the universe was speaking to you in different ways too, that wasn't necessarily a personified guide, but not that that's not important, Marilyn. We want to get to that too, of people calling in their guides. But Tani, what's your experience of guides and that kind of guidance in your life?
Thank you, Julie. I think when I was looking at Marilyn's book and seeing how she brings up the richness of all the different kinds of signs that we see in our life that speak to us, that resonate with our heart, I think I came up in an interesting context where my grandfather, we have Cherokee heritage on my father's side, and then Oglala Lakota on my grandmother's side, on my mom's side. And not that I look that native, but I think I always had this understanding that the landscape speaks to us, that there are protectors, spirits in the land, whether they be trees, whether they be, you know, the skies, that I was fascinated with physics as a young child. And so I always was looking at how do we understand our life? How do we make sense of our purpose? And so to me, that conversation, quote, with the universe, with everything around us was very natural, I think, from a young age. And I think when I would go to church and I would ask these questions and I felt like there was this assumption that we didn't have access to it, I felt very unsatisfied. And so I kept asking for signs, for ways to understand that. And I feel like through my life, then these kinds of manifestations or things that I would see on the road or things that would come into my life were incredibly synchronistic. And there was no way I couldn't pay attention to that and pay attention to the people in my life that I connected with. And I just felt like it was the aspects of blessings of this overwhelming orientation to the next step or what I should be thinking about. And I really feel like that came from teachers in my life, remarkable people in my life, Paul being one of them, that just, it was just like, how in the world did I have the great fortune to meet these incredible beings in my life? And I think that kind of synchronicity that opens up the universe to each of us allows us to see possibility and our interconnectedness in all these ways. And I think that was how I came to understand guides before I came to maybe the Tibetan medical and the Buddhist perspective, because it felt so natural, I guess. And that's what I loved about Marilyn's work, is that it was like, this is accessible to all of us. And I think we're one of the few cultures in the world where that somehow we got connected from that. And if you look at any other culture in the world, it's the water they swim in, it's the air they breathe. And I think we're one of the few cultures that somehow got disconnected with that aspect of our being.
Yeah. Tani, you were fortunate that you had the sensitivities that you were just describing when you were young, seeing the information coming in, the guided information from your environment, for example, and others. But as you're saying, we've been disconnected more in the West, in this culture anyway, and many of us have been asleep to that. And Marilyn, I appreciated your comment that we're all unique instruments. And my thought was then, okay, well, that explains why many people aren't aware of their guides. They haven't refined their instrument, figured out how it works. You also wrote in the book about each of our souls has a unique symbolic language. Mm-hmm. So how do you teach people to tune their instrument and to be able to recognize those signs? That clearly Tani, she was awake to that at a young age.
Yeah, you know, and I loved what all of you were saying, and I love what Tani said too, because I was raised Catholic, right? So you're talking about signs and symbols were coming in at an early age, and we talk about guides. Well, I was praying to saints, you know, I felt, you know, Jesus in my life, and I think it came early on. So I think it's lovely that we're able to pull upon certain traditions and rituals that we were raised with, and we don't want to not give them credibility because they make us who we are. So the symbolic language of your soul is what I teach, because what a butterfly is to me is going to be different to all three of you. We could all, right now, I could ask each one of you, what does a butterfly mean to you? Do you want to answer it?
Well, I believe that we would all be very different. I loved how you explained that in the book as well. And I totally see that. And even it's changed over time. Like my perception of a butterfly, the meaning of the butterfly has changed over my life.
To give a brief description of what Julie is referring to is our guides, whatever they are to you, it doesn't matter, our higher self, our souls, however we see it, is speaking to us through signs and symbols. And we are interpreting it through life experience. So I have a specific memory of a butterfly. So if a guide shows me a butterfly or repeatedly shows it to me, they are bringing through an experience from my life to give me a message that is really intimate to me. Whereas somebody else may have like a red rose may have a really horrible meaning to them because the guy gave it to them and broke their heart. Whereas a red rose to me is beautiful and significant to Saint Teresa. And that's what these signs and symbols are. And that's why we need to interpret it for ourselves. What are our guides talking to us? They're the highest reflections of our souls. So what are they trying to communicate to us through these signs and symbols? And then we get into a very deep, intimate conversation. And I'm sure through all your science studies, which I'm fascinated with, I can only imagine the kind of symbolic language you have inside of you from everything that you guys have studied and the cultures. How rich your language must be.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sure is. This process you were just describing about us needing to wake up to our unique way of associating with certain images from the past. Tani, with all of your medical education, as you moved into Tibetan Buddhism and the medical side of it, I know from some reading, there's such a rich history there, which you alluded to in the beginning. I mean, certainly probably the medicine Buddha is one of the most famous guides in Tibetan medicine, and you had to begin to learn these different dimensions and how to recognize working with them. Can you speak about that a bit as you've developed your medical practice?
Absolutely. Thank you, Paul. So I think maybe because of the background from being more connected to some of the Native American heritage, I think the idea that energies in the universe or qualities can be physically embodied in certain kinds of forms was very natural to me. And so I think as we started our Tibetan medical studies, where we are looking at how do we cultivate these remarkable qualities of healing personified in the medicine Buddha, right? So these essences of how you show up with a patient with complete compassion, complete quality of attention, such that your quality of attention and your compassion literally lets you be a better diagnostician, right? The kinds of markers that you pay attention to because you care about their suffering and all the aspects in their life that bring about their suffering actually literally makes you more attuned to what they're saying, to how they're moving, to what's in their urine, what's on their tongue, what's in their pulse. And so I think for me in my medical studies, I realized that these are one guides because they are considered enlightened beings, but they also are in the Tibetan Buddhist world practices that we are cultivating these qualities within ourselves, enhancing and transforming those qualities so that we can be more compassionate, enact the activities that are meant to bring better benefit in the world. And so I think what was interesting to me is that I saw a lot of that contrast in the Western medical context where we're not allowed to say, pay attention to a patient's emotional patterns in their life. Often that might not translate into the different drugs that are maybe prescribed for, say, atherosclerosis or different chronic inflammatory diseases, right? But actually, it's intimately related to what they're experiencing, right? And I mean, Paul is a psychoneuroimmunologist, right? This is part and parcel of how their life course history develops and unfolds, and what kind of, say, neurodegenerative conditions they have later in life, to what their experiences are socially, how they experience loneliness and purpose. And so I think with me, these guides that also show us these qualities that we're cultivating within ourselves and how to cultivate those qualities, the Buddha of wisdom, Manjushri, the Buddha of compassion, Avalokiteshvara, right? How all these different manifestation of Buddhas and enlightened beings actually are about getting in touch with how to bring about those qualities, to show up in our lives with others and to connect with their essences. And I feel like a lot of my work medically is helping patients to see about their own enlightened qualities, right? And that they have the resources in their life, lifestyle, nutrition, how they relate to stress, to cultivate their own healing, right? And so I think that's where those guides become about the transformative potential of our lives as well.
This is so rich. I'm just thinking about even a thread that has come through some of our responses already is from the Tibetan Buddhism. And now, Tani, your Native American roots, and then Marilyn talking about the Catholicism and really the saints. And, you know, we've all kind of held this, and then this tragic piece of separation in the Western culture that Paul brings up. Marilyn, from your perspective, what do you think that is about our Western culture that we've gotten so disconnected, where a lot of Eastern traditions stay and a lot of the indigenous stay so profoundly connected to this? And you mention a multitude of consciousnesses in the book. You talk about a multitude of consciousnesses. So I'm wondering, why have we become so disconnected in the West? And what do your guides teach us about that?
To be honest with you, I don't have the expertise to answer that question because I'm not as studied on other cultures. And I also don't approach life with that kind of understanding. For me, it's what is going on right now in front of me? What can I teach? What am I supposed to teach? So if I'm looking, I don't look at like, why are we separated and they're not? I'm more looking at how can we become more whole, or how can I become more whole every single day? So to give a really educated answer that I think Paul and Tawny can do a much better job than I can, the only thing for me that I would say in this culture, I really can't answer that because I just don't operate from that kind of consciousness. I don't listen to the news. I don't watch the news. I really operate from a place of being, I feel like. And I'm a very practical minded person. I'm very Brooklyn at times too. So it's not like I'm riding unicorns and I'm not. I'm like living on this earth plane. So my answer would be, I can't answer it. I'm very focused on how can I be more whole and work with my guides and continue to be more whole in the way that I'm teaching and helping people and taking my own segmentation and bringing it together. So that's the best answer I could give.
I love that answer. I love that honest answer.
You
I
can can't follow do it because yeah. It's such a foreign experience and concept to you. It's as if I can't speak about it. So I do appreciate that. Whereas, yeah.
But I'd love to hear what you guys think because I love being educated too.
Yeah, I would love to hear Tawny and Paul, you talking about it because it does impact everything in our world, in our life. Because Tawny, you're just talking about healthcare and health and healing. And that's a significant part of who we be as whole persons. But it impacts our education. It impacts the science. It impacts our politics, our governing structures. It impacts everything. I'm curious. I'm just going to toss it out there, Paul and Tawny.
Tawny,
jump
you
in.
First.
I'm curious.
Well, I have to say that maybe the one area that I'm most connected with, that I've seen people become whole again, is through connecting with the natural world. So there was a part of my life I did a lot of animal tracking and wilderness survival and a lot of old ways of how we relate to the land and teaching adults and kids how to basically learn how to walk into the natural world buck naked, right, and survive. These skills that actually in cultures around the world we knew growing up, right, in tribal worlds, and yet we're so disconnected from the natural world. So just teaching people about wild edibles and medicinals, how to make fire by friction, right, what does their landscape look like, where does their water come from, it empowers people. So they start leaving jobs that they've been wanting to leave for a long time or changing relationship dynamics. And we have to kind of slow them down because we're like, okay, this is just the book knowledge of these aspects. But you have to like ground this kind of knowledge in over a lot of dirt time. And I think when people start really building those skills about relating to the natural world and getting that patterning back, they start relating also to themselves in different ways and becoming whole, right? Becoming whole through connection with others. And I think in our Western cultures, often we see just the self and we see ourselves as isolated beings from others. And I think in Eastern cultures, we often have a much more social interconnected experience of community. And the natural world just like throws that in our face where we're like, we cannot move through a forest or through a grassland or through anywhere without affecting the landscape about with the birds responding and everything we do and us being affected by it. So I think just exposing people to coming back home to our roots helps them also come back home to their own beings, and that we need connection so desperately and that we are connected actually all the time. It's just a misinterpretation of our experience.
Dirt time. I really appreciated that. I often hear people say, you know, cushion time, sit time for the meditation side of trying to awaken to consciousness, but dirt time is much more fundamental. From my angle on this, of course, I would have to say something about science and the scientific model, which has become progressively more and more reductionistic and based on separation in the last couple of centuries, has totally bled out into our Western societies, how people think and what they believe in. If science says everything's mechanistic and separate, people believe that because science has had an air of authority. Fortunately, that's changing. That was partly the reason for writing my book and interviewing scientists who said, we've had enough of that. Coming into new kinds of consciousness experiences, and the science won't explain it, so I'm going to figure it out. So I'll follow up with a question on around all this. In the past, I've often thought, yes, we're assigned guides somehow, and perhaps, Marilyn, you could explain that. Who assigns the guides? How are they assigned to us? But then, Tawny, you were also speaking to the effect that, well, then we go out and seek guides. You do that in your medicine work, Marilyn. People pray to saints, presumably, to get help. So it's like a two-way street. We can pick them and some are picked for us. Can you speak about that?
Yeah, I can. And I want to bring, first of all, I love dirt time. I just had to bring time back to that because the whole thing about we don't need to be in meditation to be communicating with our guides. And I love what Tawny shared about the forest. And I moved purposely to nature to have that experience every single day because it is so beautiful and magical. And everything we're discussing is beliefs, right? Every single thing is what is our beliefs. So the question when you're asking me is who assigns us guides? And yes, I'm an expert in this field. But I also come from the place that we get to decide what's our truth. So my answer to that is I do believe that there is guides assigned to us before we're born. I believe that they are part of our community, that we know them, and that they are with us and they become interchangeable through our lives. I have guides that have stayed with me since I've met them, and then I have guides that leave and then come back in. I also believe that if I'm attracted to a specific guide like Archangel Michael or Archangel Azrael or Jesus, if I'm choosing them, they're choosing me. So I get to work with them. But when people ask me, do we have a guide that stays with us throughout our entire life? I'm not dead yet, thankfully, so I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if 30 years from now, the main guide that's been with me most of this time that I've been in touch with them, if that guide is going to be with me at the end of my time. And the beauty of this work is we get to decide what works for us and we get to believe it and then we get to do it. So when people come to me and they say, I'm really attracted to Jesus, but I don't think Jesus can be a guide for me. I'm like, why not? Why can't whoever you're attracted to, the trees, the birds, the bees. So that's my answer. I think ask your own heart and soul, whoever your guides are, whatever you feel, and that's your guide. Yeah. Tawny, I think it's you now.
I was kind of thinking back to my own history, and I do think that a lot of it comes from family lineage, these aspects as well. But I reflect on also the Tibetan Buddhist world and just the Tibetan cultural world, and that the landscapes have had spirits in those that have acted as guides, protectors, and so forth for so long that usually there's not a lot of choice for a lot of those individuals in the Tibetan cultural world because they inherit so many that it's kind of overwhelming. Maybe they feel like they don't need anymore because there's so many that they are propitiating and making offerings to, that's watching over their family, their wealth, their livestock, right? The yaks and sheep and goats and everything. And so I think that also goes to knowledge, that you receive certain kinds of knowledge that have come from, say, the time of the Buddha or these great masters, and that there are guides associated or protectors associated with that knowledge. And so in many ways, from the medical tradition, from the Tibet medical tradition, we are making offerings to those guides who historically were seen as coming into contract, right, to protect that knowledge, protect the preservation, protect its propagation through time. And that if one has the right intent to benefit others, then you will also be protected in that, and we'll see signs and so forth. And I think that there's also been different ways that the Tibetan cultural world has looked at creating new knowledge through science. So bringing out new teachings from rocks and from waters and from the mind, right? And these different treasure traditions of seeing signs, and then those not only being signs, but actually entire universes of new knowledge that come out with those. So I think as the knowledge has transmitted around the world, there's also been an acknowledgement that different cultures, here we are again, have had these histories on the land. And so I think a lot of the different traditions that I work with do make offerings to the land, asking for permission to be there and asking for those protectors to come in and to honor the activities in that area. So I think as I've worked with different patients who might have certain conditions where that might be a factor, asking them to get in touch with their own lineage, their own traditions, right? Whether it's Christian, Jewish, Islamic traditions that have different ways of relating to these two, and also looking at that as part of their conversation with those who are protecting them, that are maybe giving them signs of what other aspects of their illness journey is coming up for them, and then connecting to those literal physical landscapes where they're living, because there are histories there. There are people and cultures and beings there that have been there for many, many generations. So I think that's maybe the way that I approach it from the Tibet medical perspective.
it's so very, very rich. And Julie, before we started recording, we were speaking about this topic, having read through the books and reflected on it, that this is really, in many ways, a culmination of many of the Main Street Mystics interviews we've done so far. It touches on many of the topics, but it's very integrative. So I'm just highly appreciating our conversation so far.
And Paul, you're going to love what I'm going to say next, because as I'm listening to both Marilyn and Tani, with that question about the Western culture as well, and that separation, as I was listening to both of you respond to Paul's question, I was hearing the hero's journey, right? This innate need for us to go on that search for wholeness and literally move through separation to get back to wholeness. And as a human species, you know, being so connected to the land, I love that both of you go to nature and have that connection. There's a couple of quotes in here, and I want to bring this hero's journey in through the back door now, because there was a quote in your book, Marilyn, that I loved. You wrote really that something bigger and something greater is calling us, and usually guides come in when we're invited to expand. So it's like this consciousness, right? It's like the guides are reminding us to come back into wholeness, to expand into this way of being, this consciousness. So here's the quote. Our guides have purposes that are big, limitless, infinite, and constantly growing. They know what our soul is here to do and have wisdom that we don't have access to yet. Guides help us access the wisdom within ourselves to grow, learn, open to possibilities, and live in alignment with and reflect the truths of our souls. And I love that, because it's such a spiritual place, and the Eastern medicines of what you've been bringing through, Tani, is really spiritual healing on so many levels. But here's the one other piece. So I want to drop this in as we're talking about this hero's journey, that we do go into separation and isolation and forget who we are and then come back into wholeness throughout that journey. You say, this is fascinating to me, Marilyn, our guides can help us discover how to be fully in love with ourselves. And that piece came through, and I wanted you to write two or three chapters on it. Like, I want to know more about our guides and this journey to really be fully in love with ourselves. I just want to throw that in there, Marilyn, for you to respond first. And I know Tani is just smiling, and I think all of us can relate to that. But say more about the guides coming in to help us with self-love, becoming fully in love with ourselves.
I wrote that down. Thank you. Because now I need to write on it and share about it. I've been working with my guides for quite some time, and it's about 18 years now where I've been in direct communication. Obviously it's been a lifetime, but it wasn't until 18 years ago that I really discovered them and knew them. And the best way that I can describe this is, for the first 10 years or so, 9 years, was getting to know them, getting to know this work, how to do this work, how to deepen this work, how to really come home to my soul and come home to myself. And it wasn't until I was sitting with them one day, and they basically were holding up a mirror to me and showing me who I was a reflection of them. And that really allowed me to fall in love with myself in a way that I wasn't able to love myself before. So many people bow down to their guides. And the day that I bowed down to my guides, they bowed down to me. And they said, thank you for allowing us to do the work too. And what they're teaching me, and I can speak for myself and then all the students that I teach, is how to really love ourselves through everything, no matter what it is, because that's what we're here to do. We're here to, that's how we become into wholeness, right? Is to fully love ourselves, forgive ourselves, release the shame. And they are here to really show us our light, our brightness. And to be honest with you, we hold the key, not them. They're just showing us the way to access those points. So falling in love with myself has been this whole journey with them. And I'm so grateful to them. And there's so much more love to have that I couldn't, it's not complete. It's probably, I don't know when it'll ever be complete. So the best way that I can answer that is, it's too big of an answer. It's such a journey. And what I would really ask people to do is to get into journey with them. Invite them into your life. People are like, how do I communicate with my guide? just have that intention and invite them into your life and take every single day with them, talking with them. And for someone like myself who really needed to love myself in order to do the work that I'm here to do, I'm just so grateful to them. So I'm not sure if that answers it fully, because it is such a process that I don't have a full-on answer about it, because it is constantly evolving. I seem to be, that's why we have to go to Tawny, who's more the studied one. And I'm the like kind of philosophical life. What's going on today? How am I feeling today? What is the experience of today? But that's how I teach. I teach very open-ended. And I respect everything that Tawny and Paul is saying. Please know that, because I respect science and all those traditions. They're feeding what I teach today. But I teach with such an open-endedness that I can't put any brackets on any of this experience. So the whole thing is like, how can I love myself more each and every single day? And this morning I had an experience where I was like, not in that place. I got to tell you.
It is a journey. I think that is a really beautiful response from you, Marilyn, because this whole process invites us to love ourselves enough to even feel like the divine creator source of all creation cares enough to be with us moment by moment, yeah, in this guidance process. You know, it's like we have to love ourselves to accept that much love. And I think of you, Tawny. I'd love to hear your response, because healing is the same thing. Mm-hmm. And the Eastern traditions are so beautiful that to be whole again is to heal is to be made whole again. And that really is about loving ourselves and then really taking a chance on loving the universe enough to know that we are that loved too. So I'd love to hear you jump in here, Tawny.
Thank you, Julie. I think what's been so interesting is seeing a lot of these practices that are coming from the Tibetan Buddhists and just larger Buddhist world being secularized for mental health and well-being, right? So a lot of what we do at Center for Healthy Minds is use mindfulness training and loving kindness meditations for those who come from all different backgrounds. And one of the themes that comes up is the need for self-compassion. And this idea doesn't even exist in the Tibetan Buddhist world. There's not an idea that you have to have self-compassion, because there's such a basic love of self and such a this is the precious human life. We have the precious human life. That's the paradigm that, you know, the Tibetan cultural Buddhist world comes out of. So it's like, we have this one opportunity, because next lifetime, we don't even know what kind of form we'll take, what kind of opportunities there will be. And so I think that idea, where we've had to do a lot of work to recreate kinds of practices for exactly, Marilyn, what you're talking about loving oneself, and how that kind of self-hatred, that kind of I'm not worth enough, I'm this aspect of shame, this aspect of insecurity, of not being seen, of not feeling belonging, of incredible loneliness amidst massive populations in a city or in communities, right, is what is devastating people, what is propagating a lot of these issues that we're seeing in our world right now. And so I think that healing journey of helping people come back to what is their relationship with their self? What is that misperception, right? What is driving some of those ideas, and helping them get back in touch with that feeling of wholeness, that feeling of just themselves, not what they do, not what positions they have, not what titles they have, but helping them to come back into that being, I think is a big part of the work. Even though I feel like in Tibet medicine, I could not talk about that at all. I could say, okay, nutrition, lifestyle, medicine, some external therapies, not talking about that. But at the end of the day, it seems like at least in this area of the world where Tibet medicine is practiced, this is the heart of the conversation, is helping people to learn about this aspect of what brings them happiness and well-being and ease, right? Ease, just ease, I feel like, is the big part.
I'm just so struck by one of the overarching parts of our conversation, which is this universe and a totality of wholeness that's driving to evolve. We are representative of that, and guides are there to help us wake up to self-love. Wake up to the jewel that we are as a human being and as a soul with so many capabilities. And guides are patient, and they're always trying to get our attention. and we are doing our best to listen. And that really is, Julie, as you mentioned, the hero's journey. That's the first call. The first stage of the journey, as you know, is the call. We're all getting calls all the time. And the question is, does the hero, the heroine, do they hear the call, number one? And then once they get it, do they heed it? And I've never thought of it before. I was like, where are these calls coming from? But now we're speaking about guides, and there's a host of beings on the other side. And they'll say, well, let me, you know, I'll knock them on the head this time with a 2x4, or I'll give them a gentle shake in the middle of the night. But we're always being called to that awakening of, well, self-love, as you were both just speaking about. I'm just seeing this all in a very different way now, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, I like what, Tani, what you said about healing. And it's really true. You're not going to work on your healing if you're not loving yourself. And our guides do really, at least from my perspective, they teach us that we are the ultimate guide, us, our personal being. They aren't. And they are just trying to show us passageways in to guide our own lives even more. And I wonder how many of us leave this life saying we've lived to our fullest potential. And our goal here is to make every single day living our fullest potential. So there's so many conversations that are packed into this that I really appreciate from all of you. Like, but this could go on forever because we're touching into so many different parts of it. But ultimately, I feel like what you're coming out with all of this is you talked about separation from East and West. And it's like, let's start with the wholeness inside ourselves, and then we'll stop having separation between me and you and other people. And it's not a selfishness place. It's a place of really wanting to be whole so I can give you more. I can give you more love. I can give you more acceptance. So there's just, I just had to add something there because I wanted to.
You know, it makes me think of the story, Tani, in the book, in Paul's book, where you talked about being at a place of losing yourself. You were so enmeshed in the Eastern tradition and a new practice that you found, and you felt like you were losing yourself. And that's a part of that hero's journey too, that spiritual evolution of who we are and really understanding the journey of the ego and how we lose identity and lose different parts of our persona to really move through these spiritual stages. And so I'm just wondering from either of your perspective, but we'll start with you, Tani, about, because that experience in Paul's book to me was so profound, where you were even singing Amazing Grace to remember English to say, okay, I'm not going to forget the language, because you were really in that place of dissolution of self at that spiritual stage in your life. Do you want to speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, thank you, Julie. I think that it was one of the most shaking experiences of my life, for sure. I was in a tiny village up in Ladakh in northern India, and I had been studying Tibetan for quite some time. And so I went to this village that was 2 hours outside of the main capital of Leh. And it was an exchange program where Westerners would live with Ladakhi families because the men would go to serve in the military and they needed help on the farms. And they idealize our life in the West as much as we idealize their life. So part of it was a cultural exchange. But that family I had converted to be able to speak Ladakhi. So we only spoke Ladakhi all the time. We slept in the same room. We ate the same food. I herded a lot of the animals with them. And I think that all of my... It wasn't like I intellectually did not know I could go home to the U.S. at some point, but there was something in that experience that every aspect that had showed who I am to myself, of that I'm a lacrosse player, I'm a dancer, I do this, I do that, and my family relationship, everything was stripped from me, that I had become literally a part of another family. I literally spoke another language. I really had no other identity except for the new older sister in this family. And there was something on a very soul level that I felt like I would never be able to return to this other life I had lived. And even though I intellectually knew I could, and I think there was something in that that had me question, then who am I? If at the end of the day, I'm stripped from all of these aspects, who am I? And it was this energetic signature of how I interacted with people, how I connected. It was this, the subtlest aspect of how I used my energy with others, that I was like, oh, this tiny little thing is about me. It's this energetic consciousness that is exchanged with others. And that's what I see in how I relate to this family or into this landscape. And I think it was incredibly scary. I would cry prolifically because I really felt like I wasn't going to be going home and trying to remind myself who this identity was. But I think it was always also helpful in being able to realize that we are so incredibly transformational. We do have limitless possibilities of who we are. And that in every incarnation we have, wherever we go, whatever we do, we will be okay. Right. We are in essence a being that's whole. And I think that's really what that experience said to me at a very core level.
I wish we had more time to dig into this. I shouldn't have asked that question when we have just a few minutes left, because I'm so intrigued and I want to learn more and I want to dig into this. I want to talk. I want to do a whole nother episode on this. So we have just a few minutes left before we need to bring it to a close. But Paul, I'm wondering if you want to jump in here with any last comments or questions before we do bring it to a close today.
Yeah, I know what you meant, Julie, by just what you stated about Tawny's story, because there's so much wisdom in there. So much wisdom. You had insight really into the nature, yes, yourself, but more broadly, the nature of the human being, our capacity for transformation, the kind of temporary nature of the identity that we hold on to, and we could morph it into many things. But at the end of the day, we're so much more. My last question, I'm imagining that, is it getting easier, Marilyn? Have you noticed it's easier for people to make contact with their guides over these last few years versus the years before, and so on and so on, simply because there's this sense humanity is evolving. At least many people are stepping into new experiences of consciousness, less separation, less duality, more wholeness, more love. And therefore, I would think, is this true? That helps cultivate these gateways to be better recognized.
Yeah, I think it's a lot simpler for quite a few reasons. One is the belief system that it's not just for the gifted, we're all gifted. So we now have opened the door for everybody to communicate however they want to communicate. I think our consciousness has elevated to such a level where time is completely blurred. Dimensions are just coming together. I mean, I am literally outside and all of a sudden I'll see in front of me a door that isn't there, or I'll see light, and we're all having access to so much more information, and we're able to get in touch with our guidance, and we're able to see things and feel things and sense things in a way that we never have before. And I also feel like we're allowing it more. It's the ease and the grace of allowing it more. So yes, we do have capability, and it is so much easier than it's ever been. And the only thing that ever gets in people's way is mindset. That's the only thing. Believe that you can and you will.
Yeah, I am noticing. I'm with you on that. People are waking more and more. Thanks for bringing that in, Paul, and the ease of it. We literally are, Tawny, with you, and you had that long ago in your life experience, but so many people on the planet are having that dissolution right now and in kind of mass consciousness. It's fascinating. So another show, let's mark that down, Paul. That would be a good topic to bring several guests in and talk about. But thank you both for joining us today and bringing your wisdom into this conversation. It's been really, really delightful.
Thank you.
Such a pleasure to be here with all of you. Thank you.
Yeah. And listeners, I want to leave you with the words of Marilyn Aloria from her book, Guides. And by the way, there are very easy to follow exercises in there, practices for you to get in touch with your guides and really develop that relationship. So go pick that up, Guides. It's part of the Common Sentience book series. So here are some words. We are all magical creations, gifted and special. My guides brought me home to my soul, which has brought me inner peace. Go out there and live boldly in full acceptance of yourself. Take the risks you desire, follow the dreams in your heart, and know you are never, ever alone. Your guides have your back, and they are with you every step of the way. I'm Julie Kroll. You've been listening to the Dr. Julie Show, All Things Connected. This is the Main Street Mystic Series with co-host Paul J. Mills. Remember, together, we are creating connections for the good of the whole. Until next time, I'm sending you a world of love. Bye for now.
If you enjoyed the show, go to your favorite podcast platform. Remember to subscribe, rate, and leave us a review. Also, please consider supporting the Dr. Julie Show at patreon.com/allthingsconnected. When we each give a little, we all get a little more. You can stay in touch with me at juliecrawlemail.com. Thanks for listening.